We each have our own gift to give, and yours is unique. What reality you want to create, it's your choice, always. No one can take that from you. I've got Ed Lattimore here, and I'm super pumped because, dude, I've been following you on Twitter for a long time, and you just seem to really say profound shit and also like do it in a fun and entertaining way. I bought you have an ebook called Engagement is a New Cocaine, I think.
Where I talk about some of the ideas that I use when it comes to writing, not just on Twitter, but that's you know what it was designed for. But it turns out, and someone pointed this out to me who bought the book, it was just like English in high school. If they had Twitter when we were in high school,
I wish
we would have learned a lot more about like alliteration and parallelism and anaphora and metaphor. Yep. And like how to use that to really be a good writer. But instead, we're just, you know, we're taught it with text from like 100 years ago.
Right.
So
My audience knows, I'm an alliteration geek. I love it. I actually did a show when this whole coronavirus thing started called Crushing the Coronavirus with Calvin Corelli and his co-conspirators.
Like, yeah.
Yes.
Works. Like you can see, you know, it works. It sounds something about these devices. They just sound more pleasing to our ear. And if you can use those and
write
like you have good content, good things to say,
right?
You can go really, really far, in my opinion. And you know, and I think I'm a great example of that. There are tons of people who have like more real life fame. Like they walk down the street and people go, that guy's, you know, and I have more followers than them, or they follow me. You know, every day I find someone new with a blue check mark. I'm like, oh wow, that person follows me. That's crazy.
Sweet. You know? Yeah. Well, and I remember Tony Robbins talks about like, we remember stuff when there's emotion associated with it, right? So if you can make people chuckle a little or just like smile, like, or something that just shifts in their head because you write it in a compelling way, like it's going to stick more, right?
Draw stats, you know, people do these like generic list of ideas and things, and I'm like, you know, the list is good because it's short and it's easy to remember and it's engaging, and people like look at a thing and they go, oh man, that looks like it's gonna be tough to read, I'm not gonna touch that, right? But they get the idea with the list. That's why like all the websites go, you know, 8 lessons this or 7 signs that. But where they mess up, the points in the list are just so boringly just boring, and I'm like, if you just tweak that just a little, you're gonna have a home run. You're gonna like, and you know what's funny? Where I learned this, my training in school, I went to school, my degree is in physics, and there's tons of writing in physics and science in general. People don't realize that, because you have to write a clear lab report, and the lab report you have to use precise language. But you have to, and you also have to, you know, explain things clearly so, you know, your results are replicable and people know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, that sounds kind of cut and dry, but what it does instead is it really gives you an appreciation for the word you choose. Mm-hmm. And if you take that appreciation, that technical mastery, and you put it into a stylistic device, you can go really far. But it also lets you know, you know, when you're kind of breaking rules and having fun, and,
right.
You can do you really what I've really become over the past few years, and this was never the plan, is I think I've really gained control over the English language to the point where like, it benefits me. Like for all intents and purposes, my life is, you know, my income and my connections, everything is from my ability to use words, whether it be to teach or whether it be to entertain.
So that's a fascinating point, right? Because with the physics thing, I think I resonate with that also because, you know, I'm a software engineer, right? So that sort of engineering language, I've always been like had that like very precise in my use of language whenever possible, right? And so they think there's something to that mindset, right? Whether it's physics or, you know, engineering, of like stringency and sort of knowing exactly what you're doing, how you're using the words.
It's like, you know, you don't really learn how to be creative until you have restraints placed on you. I really right. believe
that. Yeah, yeah.
And so because I know that I'm only working with a certain number of words and I can't go any further, or I'm working at a certain level of assumption, and to go any further than that or to explain a concept more to on a different level, I'm going to need to introduce more words and possibly draw people off the main point. You become cognizant of these things that people don't normally think about. And when you start thinking about them, I really think that your writing improves. And this is one of the best things about Twitter. You know, I have 112,000 followers and some change, right? But I got my K. I call it the K. You know, when you get so many followers, they have to add a K at the end, right? And that's when you get 10,000 plus. I got my 10,000 followers back before they doubled the character limit. So I was already having a lot of fun. You know, I realized these limitations are excellent because they make you, if you use them, they make you a better writer. And one of the things I teach everyone is, I'm like, you know, stay away from threads. Guys use threads because they're lazy writers. They're like, no. Make yourself express the point in 280 characters.
I like that.
Chances are, if you can do that and you just continually do it, you just build a habit, you're going to learn how to say more with less. And sometimes even fewer, you know, and it's gonna have a profound effect on how people, you know, it hits them. Like, that's how I describe my words. Like, a lot of times I think I hit people and they remember it. Because I say all the time, you know, I'm not saying anything new. Like, you know, I love to go, I'm the most original dude in the world, and everyone should follow my thoughts because my thoughts are, you know, are the stuff, right? But I know that that's not true. And that's, again, I'm aware of that limitation. I'm never trying to be original. I'm never trying to come up with a new insight. What I do try to do is I try to put my perspective, my experience, my way of wording to it.
I think that's a powerful lesson for anything. Like, so at Simplero, we you know, online courses and memberships and that kind of stuff. And I think that's one of the things that our customers also struggle with is, you know, oh, but like, am I the best in the world at this? Like, there's so many other people that knows, like, yeah, no, screw that, right? Like, are you able to express it in a way that's your way to express it? That's, you know.
Yeah, you know, like I wrote a book, Sober Letters to My Drunken Self, and it was about dealing with the transition point from drinking to sobriety. And I wrote that as a and I'm sure I said nothing new, right, about addiction or getting sobriety. Nothing like a real old school, like, you know, guys with 10 years and like three big ass chips are gonna be like, man, I've been in the game, I've been, you know, for that long. Nothing new, right? But what I add, it was my own experience, my own perspective, my own way of writing things, whatever, right? What I thought was important to me.
And I'm still learning this, like, the more personal you make it, the more general it becomes, right?
Yeah, isn't that weird?
It's so strange. It's so crazy. Yeah. This morning we had a coaching call with a group, and I read people this poem that I wrote back in November. I haven't read it for anyone since, except this morning, but it's just like someone was asking a question. It just felt compelled. And that's like such a deeply personal story in that poem, and then like sharing with the group was like pop, pop, pop. You could just hear the everything popping in people's, you know, minds and hearts. It's still confusing to me, but it really works.
It's an interesting idea. You know, the more, what they teach, like, when you are speaking, speak to one person, right? Mm-hmm. When you're writing, write to one person. When you're expressing yourself, now we found another derivative of that, which is, when you are trying to be, the more specific you try to become, the more you try to be, the more general your advice will appear.
Right.
And that is so, I love when I get a new insight. I've actually never really thought of that, But I always say, you know, your way of saying, I always say, you know, you take your insights from your specific kind of area of expertise, and in trying to explain them, you're gonna do wonders. You're gonna be surprised by how many people connect, because the meta ideas across all fields, you know, are the same. Shooting a gun is different than throwing a football, but the idea of practice and deliberate intent, you know, intention, focus on the process versus the outcome is the same. And I'm just, man, really, my mind's taking it all in right now. But I agree with that. The more specific you can be, the more general you can become. And you have to remember, I mean, anyone listening, and I think you get this either implicitly or explicitly, that you're not becoming general for the sake of becoming more popular, more widely accepted, or having more people vibe with you. No, that's not the goal. You're becoming general because our experiences are shared. They're just, you know, through different mediums that we reach the same kind of conclusions, or we have the same fillet. Like, someone knows loss, how they know loss is, right, you know, their own personal journey. Someone knows love, how they know love is their own personal journey, right, et cetera.
Yeah, and so, like, you can identify. It's like, yeah, and then I went through a really painful experience. Like, it's like, great, I've done that too, right? But nobody can identify with that. Nobody can feel it. Versus, like, yeah, and then I, you know, got a call that my husband had crashed in his car and was dead, right? Like, okay, wow, now we're talking. And, like, yeah, and I went there, you walk through the story, like, it gets very specific, and then we can all relate to it. And then, like, yeah, I've been in a situation where I felt a similar feeling, and now it becomes personal. I wanted to hear, so you mentioned that, like, addiction and sobriety and all that. So I want to get your story. That one of the key themes of this show is your journey to find sort of that inner fire, that inner drive in yourself. And so it sounds like a period of addiction was kind of trying to drown that stuff out, like, you know, numbing out in some way, right?
Yeah, you know, everybody just sees, I'm always in awe. I go, man, I'm 35, and that's not that old. I mean, but it's not that young. It is right what they say it is, you know. Yeah, I guess that's middle age. And I think about where I am now compared to where I started. Like, we want to go, like, I started this journey, and it was a serious, intentional, deliberate move to undo a lot of my bad habits, cultivate a lot of good ones, and really make progress. And we'd say, you know, I think 28, I use my sobriety date. Really 27, I was 27, but it was like December 23rd is my sobriety date, 2013. So I just kind of jump and go, I was 27, 28. And here's the thing, man. Your priorities have to be right. And even if they're off by a little bit, the longer they're the obviously, you know, it change over time, and, you know, if you're off by this much at the beginning, and then that little 1 degree difference after a long amount of time, and, you know, it's a big difference. I was off. I cared about the wrong things. I really think that, and one of the things I cared about, just to be more even more specific, I wanted to be well liked. I wanted to be popular. I wanted, you know, I didn't
God quite of understand the God of approval. Yeah, I call
the
it
God yes. of approval. You know, I was chasing, and I was chasing approval from people, like both men and women in different ways, obviously. And one of the ways I thought that it would work is if I could somehow be this cool party cat, drink or whatever. But a funny thing happened. Just a series of events and experiences. I forgot how to socialize and be interesting without alcohol. Mm-hmm. And you know, so
I moved to India in I moved to India in 2012, and the first 5 months there were like no alcohol, no meat, no coffee, that kind of thing. And I made some local friends there, and I realized, in my entire adult life, I've never made a friend without alcohol. Isn't that fucking crazy? Isn't that
mind blowing, man? Right, dude.
I'm like, whoa.
And so, like, and so, you know, there came a point in my boxing career, I got a really great opportunity. I got recruited to go train out in Los Angeles. They were paying for everything, but I was lonely. I was suddenly moved out there, and I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't know anyone, right? And my driver's license was suspended. It was nothing related to alcohol. It was a stupid unpaid ticket. Point is, I spent a lot of time alone. But in California, unlike I live in one of two states, right, where the alcohol is sold by the state. California is not one of those states. I'll walk over to Target and get a bottle of booze, and it got even worse and worse and worse because I was drinking to find a sense of togetherness, you know, and to feel better, to try and rekindle what I had back home when I was around people, which is, oh, we're going to go out to drink. 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 You know, that was the social environment. And once I decided, I remember very clearly how it worked. I had one bad night of drinking, and I woke up, and it was right after I got back from my training for my initial entry into the military. And I said, okay, I got too much to lose now. I enrolled in school. That's why I went to the military. I was in the military now. My professional boxing career was just starting. And the girl I live with and we're together now, and I had just met her. And I was like, okay, a lot of this, you know, and I felt like she had some good potential. And, you know, I was right. We're still here 8 years later.
Nice.
And
congrats.
Or seven years, I think, something like that. Then you ask her, eight, you ask me, seven, whatever, right? But we're all here, and I said, okay, I got some real stuff that I really want to be. I'm going to aim to be respected now.
Mm.
And
oh, yeah. Fuck
that
yeah.
made
Fuck
a big
yeah.
difference. Because when you're liked, you're not necessarily respected.
Oh,
and in fact, a lot of times you have to act in a way that's going to make you get less respect so you can get that short-term boost of liking
yeah.
and approval.
And you're also going to respect yourself less, right, for doing that.
Right. Oh, ain't that the truth, man?
Yeah.
When you try to act in a way where you respect yourself, a chain reaction starts. First, other people start respecting you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting because respect does not always look like when we were at first, it's like, I don't really know how to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
But then over some time, I realized, you know, people weren't inviting me out when I was chasing like things that would make me like. Now they got it. You know, I respected my time, and I was out here being serious about everything. But when we did get together, you know, let's get together and have lunch. Let's get together and have dinner, you know. I got invited, you know. I've been friends with these people longer than I haven't. And my second year of sobriety, after they were like, I think he's serious, then I started getting invited to the family Christmas party and everything, right? Like real signs of maturity started to emerge. And I realized I just had a really bad relationship with alcohol. Now, I don't want to make it sound like that's the only reason. There are other things, man. Like my personality, I'm not an all or nothing guy, but I'm okay. For all intents and purposes, I'm an all or nothing guy. You know, and realizing that before it got me into trouble is one of the best things ever. I mean, like, best things that could have happened to me, and not just with alcohol. Everything from how I approach my work to how I approach my friendships and my relationship. It's a lot easier. It takes more energy to balance than it does to just let the thing tip to one side.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think by definition, most people try to exist as the average. But when you are, you know, a standard DBA, when you have it in you to get to the other end, man, you got to run with it, but you have to align that with something that's going to make you better. I think there's a lot of people like me in prison. And a lot of people like me who have ruined their lives because they had the same personality, they had the same energy, and it never got aligned to something that would make them better.
Mm-hmm.
One of my best friends when I was a kid, he, like, you know how when you log in to like a certain app and it's like, what was your, and one of the secret questions, the name of your best childhood friend, right? That's the guy's name I use. We got separated when we were like nine and then reconnected recently as adults. very similar personality, intelligence, freaky. His birthday is 1 week before mine. He had the same thing, got aligned a different way, and ended up becoming one of the biggest drug kingpins in my city.
Holy shit. What was it though? Like, what was that moment of decision? What was it that made you go this way?
Oh man, I tell this story, man. Really, sometimes, you know, I'd like to give myself credit. I like to say I thought through it. Okay, but you know, if you want to be real, I mean, I think one moment I had a moment of clarity and pain, because it was a painful moment. I woke up, I was hungover, I knew I had pissed some people off. I knew that nothing had changed, even though I was away for 9 months in the military, and I had a moment. I sat and I looked at my future, those four things I mentioned, the girl, the sports, the school, the military, and I said, okay, we know where this ends, right? You ever see The Matrix, right? Mm-hmm. Before Neo gets out of the car and he's running away, and Trinity stops him and says, you know, you don't want to go down that road, Neo. You know that road ends, and you know you don't want to be there. That is almost identical to what happened here. I had a brief, very brief moment where I looked in the future and I said, okay, I'm going to turn. I was 27 at the time. I'm going to turn 33, 34 one day. God willing, I'm going to do that. Am I going to be that age with more options or fewer options? You know? And
I was like, okay, if I keep going down this path, this is where I'm going to end up. And I don't want to end up there. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Pretty much. And I know people, you know, you tell kids that and they just kind of brush it off, or they don't realize the importance of it. Mm-hmm. I think I got that message, and I came to that conclusion on my own at a key moment. Mm-hmm. Because if I wait a year longer, maybe I make a really big mistake. Even 6 months, that's one thing that really dawned on me with sobriety. Every day you don't have control, or you're not trying to get better, is the day you're getting worse, the day you're likely to do something, you know, irreversible. Mm-hmm. And at that point, then your apologies and your recovery means nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is it? It's like, what drives you now to be that person that you are? Like, what is your driver?
I'm not particularly satisfied. I mean, you want to talk like things that I can count. I mean, I don't really think about monetary limitations for standard living anymore. I'm in a nice apartment. I got a computer. I got food whenever I want. If I could travel, I could go anywhere. There's not, in the sense of most people's lives, no limitation. I want the next level, and then I'll probably be content in terms of like what drives me to chase anything related to money. I'd like to be able to hop on a first class flight anywhere at the last moment, right? And mm-hmm. not think about it. Mm-hmm. Now I gotta think about it. I really hate thinking about things, which is great because I got a girlfriend who I was telling her yesterday. I said, you know what's great? You are very conservative. You know, she's in the travel industry and all this happened. And I said, you know what's cool? You have like a savings account, and like you saved it over time. I have a savings account because I just had an excess amount of money in like 12 or 24 months from making it. So, you know, together we're good. So it smooths out. But I want to get to the point where I'm not thinking about things like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what drives me in terms of like making money. But even still, if that never happens, I mean, I'm going to die one day. Shit, either I'm going to pay off and have a bunch, or I'm not. I want right now, I have an image of who I see myself as.
I want to hear about that. What is that like?
And that guy, you know, I want to be good at chess. I want to write cool books. Mm-hmm. I want to teach. I really feel like, due to some experiences, and we can get into that if you're interested, I really feel like my purpose on this planet is to teach, or at the very least, I'm so much better at it. Like, I have the right personality traits to come together that I think you need to be an effective teacher. Like, that's my gift. Like,
I believe. Like, yeah.
So I have that, and where I really want to teach. So right now, I'm just working with people on writing, on, you know, whether it be for Twitter or their website, you know, kind of like how we first got connected. I'm mm-hmm. doing a lot of that. Prior to this, I was actually tutoring kids in chemistry, physics, mathematics, basically anything not, basically the things that are hard, you know, because the English is easier for a lot of people. And I don't want to teach it anyway. It's very subjective, but learning how to solve and walk through problems is cool. I had done some boxing and stuff too, working with people and that there, you know, breaking down my thought process and then trying to get it through to them. But really, really just anything. Like if I have an even ounce of expertise in it, but I'm humble enough to know you got to know your shit. You can't just, there's a lot of people who just want to be teachers, and that was never me growing up. Like, I want to be a teacher. Like, no. I know like two or three things now well enough to where I would feel comfortable giving you my instruction and investment for like 9 to 12 weeks, and then, you know, sending you out in the world and seeing what happens. Because the worst is when you teach somebody the wrong stuff and they come back and they're like, you told me this. And I'm like, yeah, I did. Let me tweak that. It's like,
I really believed it at the time, though.
So yeah, I just, you know, whatever it is that I understand and grasp, I don't mind it at all. So if I end up like, a lot of people don't know this. Well, I think I told you this. We were talking before. Right now, sure. I mean, I'm doing the whole digital thing and building money up that way, and it's cool. But like, my real goal, man, I'm pretty sure I'm gonna go chase my PhD. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm doing that, one, because I want to contribute to the knowledge base of this planet. There are a few things that are interesting enough to me to get involved. I like learning, and then that sets me up in a position to go teach somewhere. I mean, like I said to you before, if I'm doing the same thing in 10 years, that is a real failure. It doesn't matter how much I've earned, because here's the thing, and maybe you can, I bet you can identify with this. There comes a point where you realize that making money is neither an is not an indication of anything. Like, mm-hmm. once you understand how it works, you can just kind of see it everywhere and do it. It doesn't mean you've contributed anything. It doesn't mean you've made the world a better place. It doesn't even mean you're fulfilled. Like, it just means you got some money. And it took having just a little bit of money to really have that hit home. Like, it's one thing to say it when you're broke, and then people just think you're sour grapeing it. But it's a totally different thing when you're in a position to go, you know what? I really would rather be studying, training, or maybe running a gym and teaching people in that regard. Mm-hmm. But the whole, you know.
Yeah. I always like, so picture like, all of the activities that people do, right? Like, you just watch them. Like, right now we're sitting here having this conversation, right? Or like, you know, if you follow me along my work and I meet with people and have a conversation, like, and then somewhere underneath that is this money stream. Like, some money are changing hands. And for me, it's like, it's almost like the two aren't really connected. Like, I get to do the things that I enjoy doing, like having this conversation with you right here, or talking to the people on my team and doing fun things together, learning together, growing together. Like, you know, like, that's the fun part, right? And like, the money yeah. just like is kind of there, and like, circles. We don't even see it these days, right? It's all just numbers in a computer somewhere, right? So
yeah, it's really I think you have to have a certain mind, and once your mind is free, you can go, okay, I understand money. I understand fitness. I understand relationships, whatever. Right. Right. And then you're more or less free and content. And then, you know, then you build on top of that. How can I add value and meaning to my life? But I was thinking about it like this, right? Money's like fitness. You look, just because you're fit, that doesn't mean anything else about you. There's a lot of, man, there's a bunch of guys in prison But that's what they do, man. They work out and lift weights and do body weight exercise and everything. Man, these are fit, strong guys. They're in prison.
Right.
I mean, you can develop any part of your life in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And it will, or rather, every part of your life kind of exists on its own. But it takes a certain level of awareness to go, I want all of this, and I want it to kind of work together.
No, if that makes sense. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And the thing that I'd add to that is, like, you mentioned, like, your money, right, and your relationships and your health. Like, we want all those to work. And the thing that I would add is, like, is your creativity, right? That expressing that unique thing, unique voice that's yours and just yours. Which you obviously are doing, right? Get those four working together in an integrated way. Like, I mean, that's it. You're set, right?
And then you know, I think about what, like, we're sitting right here having this conversation, and it is 1:24 p.m. on a Monday, and that's kind of freedom, man. You can't right. You can't pay for that, because look, there are people who probably make more than I do, but they don't have the kind of freedom to do what they want. And there are people who make less, and maybe they don't have to be at work, but that ain't a good thing. That means they might be wondering where they're gonna be in 30 days when the rent's due. So it's really an optimal life that we're pursuing. Mm-hmm. And an optimal life, you can't have just one good part of it. I mean, ain't nothing would be more embarrassing to me anyhow than being 35 and being in sick, head-turning shape, but I got to worry about my car being declined when I go shopping for food.
Right.
Nothing crazy, right? Yeah. And likewise, for many people, this would be just as embarrassing if they were making $1 million a month, but they were 35 and probably needed a triple bypass in like a year, and they can go to the bathroom and they got to, you know, reach for it in faith. They're not sure if they can look down and, you know, see the thing. So there are, we don't just, and it takes time. It takes time. Like I know that even though I consider myself a late bloomer, that I think the late blooming is almost like from a, I think when I get older, I'll look back and I go, you weren't really late blooming. It takes time to have everything come together the right way.
I like that way of thinking about it. Yeah.
And you feel good. It feels like that now, because I think because you look at what you were doing, right? And you look at what you're doing now. And we'll say what I'm doing now, I've been doing, which is living intentionally and kind of pursuing a goal without any of the distractions since 27. I go, man, if only I could have been doing that at 20, where would I be now? And that makes sense to us because of how we relate to time, but it doesn't make sense when you think about how long it takes to learn things, man. Mm-hmm. Like you know what blows my mind every time I read it? That your prefrontal cortex, the part of your brain that, like, says, yo, that's a bad idea, bro, please don't do it, that does not finish developing until you're 25.
Oh, yeah.
And so part of me goes, okay, you know, is it my fault? You know, but
it's our little worry. Yeah. Like, hey, I'm curious, like, on your journey, like, what are some of the most challenging things that you had to face about yourself? Like, what are those places that you had to go inside in order to become who you are today?
Oh, man. There's always, you know, if looking in the mirror is not uncomfortable, you are either not looking in a mirror, or you're a psycho. I don't know. Like, I just, I preface what I'm about to say with that, because you have to. I remember the first time I had the courage to be like, look, man, I ain't shit. Like, I mean, I am nothing. Mm-hmm. That's what I felt. And to be able to look at yourself and say that, it takes to be just humble and go, okay, I did badly. But because I did that and I made changes, that gave me the ability, when I lost my first fight, I got knocked out in the first round. It was embarrassing. It was on TV for the whole world to see. It was awful. I couldn't look at that video for 7 months. It was like breaking up with a girlfriend and being able to finally look at pictures of you guys together. Right? But once I looked at it, I could get back and I started training for another fight, but then I got injured during training and then just decided boxing took too much risk versus where I was at in my life now. But it wasn't until I could look at that video that I could feel comfortable going back into the gym and training. You have to always look at the areas where you are deficient, where you're not the best friend, where you don't have the best habits, where you're not treating yourself right.
It's interesting because it's that, like, striking that balance between, like, if you're deluding yourself about how good you are and how far you are, it's kind of like that roadrunner where you're like, you're running in midair, right? So you're like, your feet are not touching the ground. And so, like, you can run all you want, but you're not really going to get anywhere, right? So we want to look ourselves square in the eye and be like, this is reality, right? But we also don't want to go down that, like, I'm useless, I'm nothing, like, I'm terrible. Right?
Dude, that is hard. That's hard, but that is a sign of maturity. You need to be able to look at a thing with as little bias as possible. You're trying to see it as it is, not as you wish it to be, not as it makes you feel, not with any preconceived notions. You just have to look at it, and then you have to, once you look at it, you have to also go, okay, how do I move forward with this information? This is not easy, and this is not a matter of intellect. It's not a matter of will. It's not a matter of emotional control. It's this kind of, I have to learn a new word. I have to learn a word for this, but it's like looking at a river and seeing how crazy that stream is, and we're just acceptance of reality. That's all it is, right? I was coming up with an analogy, and I just realized all it is accepting reality. And if you can accept reality, then you have to also take that same mentality and go, okay, what can I do about this to help me reach my goal, to help me get what I want out of the situation? Mm-hmm. Too many people get their feelings involved, get their ego involved, get their hopes or their fears, and those drive you either way, in opposite directions, but away from what is really in front of you. And you can solve a lot of problems this way. And it's not just, you know, life problems. I mean, anything. Whenever I sit down to help someone solve a problem, I'm trying to solve my own problems. I go, okay, what am I trying to get out of this? And then I work backwards. And I think a lot of people just they can't even work backwards. They get stuck on these obstacles where the bark is worse than the bite. They just seem scary, but when you sit and think about it, you go, okay. So I gotta make $500 for my rent. All right, man. Now, this sucks, but what can I do? I can go donate plasma. I know that, or something like that. I got a few friends. I bet I could borrow something and let them know I'm good for it. And then in the meantime, start applying for some jobs. And I'm just thinking about, we used to call it the rent shuffle when me and some friends lived together, and it was just a goofy thing. But no, that's all it is, man. Is looking at reality, and you're part of reality, and you got to be able to look at yourself and go, I'm deficient, and that's hard because we don't want to. I don't even think people want to lie to themselves. I think it's more they don't want to deal with the discomfort that comes with admitting that kind of thing to yourself. So I don't think it's as intentional. I'm a lie to myself, whatever.
Discomfort.
But if you get past that, man, the world's yours. A lot of people operate on nonsense.
Exactly. I'm with you. Which is fascinating, right? Because like the shift isn't that, like, it's, yes, it's a challenge and it kind of can feel big inside. Like, but once you make that shift, it's like, oh, you're like, oh, was that it? Like, it's like, oh, okay. I wanted to touch on politics because you tweak sort of politically charge things, and how did you end up sort of in that world, and how's that for you?
You know what's crazy about this, man, and I think it's okay. So first, let me preface this, and it's so interesting you said politically charged things. I don't vote. I don't pay attention to politics. I mean, I'm aware of them because it's kind of hard not to be given my position on Twitter, and we'll dig into that a little more because it's highly relevant. But for the most part, like, I don't put my mind on it because from my perspective, doesn't matter to me. I mean, like, sure, I'm sure, like, you know, some decisions will ultimately affect the livelihood of my kids or something if I have them, right? But my day-to-day life, look, I lived in a project with 4 different presidents, man. Nothing changed. And that taught me that I had to pull myself out and I had to worry for myself. I just never felt connected with the process of voting. And then my brain goes, man. That's a
powerful message right there.
Oh yeah, and then my brain went, well, man, there's like millions of people, and there's only 2 people to choose from ultimately in the presidential election, and even on smaller ones, there's not that many more. I mean, it really doesn't seem like it makes a difference. I hope no one takes that message and adopts it en masse, because it only works for me, because most other people don't do it. Okay, if we all stop caring, then we got a problem. Anyhow, with all of that said. Because I ran a poll. I was like, you know, one day I said, you know, do you guys think that I voted for Trump? And a bunch of people wrote back, no, but I think you probably lean more on his side of the spectrum than, you know, I don't even know who his opponent was, Hillary Clinton or in other words, people said I probably lean more Republican than Democrat. And then a buddy of mine who's in the D2C space, he said, he was like, you know, a lot, he's a black guy who went to, I think West Point, really successful, when he goes, you know, a lot of self-made black men tend to lean Republican naturally anyway. And it got me thinking, and this is why I come off a certain way, I think, even though I don't try to. My whole stance is self-reliance, accountability. You know, I don't look for anybody to hand things out to me. I don't try to control anything. I'm really focused on me and doing me. And I have such low tolerance for excuses. I mean, like, I really do. Probably lower than I think. Even a hardcore type person. I mean, look, if you just own and be like, man, I just messed up and wasn't interested, I can deal with that. But when you start giving me excuses, then, you know, then we got a problem. And what I found is that runs very counter to a lot of liberal ideas. Mm-hmm. And you know, and maybe they're not going to say, oh, we want someone to take responsibility, but they're going to support things that I'm realistically just going to be relatively, if not staunchly, opposed to. And it just is interesting how that goes. I try to be not, I mean, whatever the issue is, some things I think about, I'm sure like some issues I'd be considered liberal, some I'd be considered conservative, or somewhere in between, like libertarian. But my whole thing is self-sufficiency, and that seems to just align with conservative libertarian
ideas. It's interesting, right, that self-reliance and you know, being responsible for yourself and your own life is like, why is that even a political thing? Like, why is that even like a conservative issue, right?
Well, you know why it's a political thing? Because what's supposed to be the purpose of the government, right? To manage and take care of its people, all right? Yeah. You know, protect them from threats, foreign to police, domestic threats. The idea, you know, too much government and you get something like Orwellian, too little government and you got something like the Wild Wild West. And I don't think we want either one of those. Mm-hmm. We want something in between, you know, where God can't rob me, but don't bother me while I'm smoking weed in my house. Like that kind of thing. The problem is balance is very difficult, if not impossible, to achieve for one thing. But then when you take that across a whole spectrum and a whole country, 330 million people, and they realize the power of politics, the power of getting a group to go, that is wrong or that is right, if you can hijack and you can put a cause behind another one that people already feel strongly about, yeah, you know, I always say humans are excellent at corrupting any system. No system is perfect. I don't care about communism, totalitarianism, capitalism, whatever you want, we're gonna corrupt it. That's what humans do, man. Okay. And what I was saying, like, you know, putting issues behind a certain thing, one of the things I was paying attention to because I thought it was interesting is the whole fight for trans rights, right? And there was the big thing about the bathroom in North Carolina, and that was crazy. But here's and for those not familiar with the story, the idea was that, you know, some states said that they're not going to allow people of who were born a certain sex, where they weren't going to allow them to use the bathroom of the sex they now identify with. Whether you think that's crazy or not is not the point I'm trying to make. The point I am trying to make is that they attach that to the gay rights agenda first, which is a cool kind of attachment that makes sense in my brain. Okay, where you're going to go with it? But then they attach it to the civil rights movement, and that's where I had to go. Okay, see, here's the thing. I didn't get a choice to be born black, you know. And furthermore, the way we were treated at that point is nothing, you know. Like, there's gonna be no fire hose. There's gonna be no dog sicked on you because you tried to go. If you try and do a stand and use the bathroom, like it's a completely different thing. But there's that connection they can make. And so I thought that was I think those kind of things are really interesting, but that's the power of politics. They people think and they go, okay, if we can get them to think about us the way they thought about the right. blacks, eventually we're gonna be in good shape. And then our agenda is gonna be pushed forward, and then we can push another agenda forward, you know?
Mm-hmm. God. So on that note, like, I'm curious, reparations pro or con?
Oh, man, I'm against reparations. Here's why, right? For somebody goes, call me an Uncle Tom, whatever, right? Because at this point, I've heard it all. I don't care. Very much against it. Because, look, here's my argument here's my argument just about slavery in general. And I was actually talking to Naval about this. Is that slavery is one of those things that was a method of building. You know, we didn't have technology. People think it's some kind of magical coincidence that the slave trade dies as the Industrial Revolution starts. What happens is that the machines are just more efficient than people. One of the reasons the South got their ass kicked is they were not technologically caught up to the North. They just couldn't hang. And not slavery won out over slavery because it's just a more feasible economic system. Mm-hmm. But our struggle, you know, this is just recency bias. I'm here because I'm here in America of this skin tone because most likely somebody in my family was brought over here and was used to help build the country. And then there's the whole fight for us integrating into society and everything as free citizens. But every country was built on the back of slavery, you know, because if you give us reparations, what's next? You know, the Chinese get reparations for the work they put in on the railroad, the Japanese for the internment camps that right. they and the suffering they endure. That's just a black eye on history. And that's all it is. And you got to remember, man, it ain't like people forget this. It's not like every white person had a slave, man. You had to have a little bit of money to have a slave. You know, it's not we weren't just these like they make it sound like that up and down the East Coast of America. There were just these hordes of blacks like cars just working everywhere. Like, it wasn't really like that. I mean, yeah. It wasn't. You know,
to me, there's also the like self-reliance aspect of it, right? Like, I mean, the like, how is someone's great great grandparent was a slave, and like, how is that gonna?
No, yeah, like, now with that, this is where my, because I think I see where you're going. Like, this is the part of
the what matters today is the decisions that each and every one of us makes today, right?
Completely agree with you on that. Here's the other, because I weigh the issues out and I go, okay, I don't think reparations would make a difference, but I'm also not prepared to think that, okay, let's say you were born in 1950. That means that today you'd be 50. Your grandkids would, well, not today. I don't know why I jumped to freaking 2000. You'd be 70. You'd be 70, which means you likely had a kid, you know, who's going to be in their 30s now. All right. Well, why is this relevant? If you were born in 1950, you almost certainly have a grandparent that was a slave. Slavery didn't get abolished until like 1861. Fit five somewhere in that, right? 1860s. All right. And then there was the whole reconstruction of the South and all these things, the Jim Crow laws, all of that. There was a history that made it very difficult for African Americans to make progress. And progress is cumulative. If your parents come, you know, start out with a house and some money, and you ain't got to live in the hood, you're probably gonna have a bit of a jump. Now, does that have to do with somebody, you know, sticking up a liquor store today? No, you know better, man. Like, so that's why I'm like, okay, well, what reparations all of a sudden change your mindset? I'm like, no, that's just throwing money at something. In fact, you want to know what happened in reparations? Dave Chappelle's got a great, I mean, hilarious skit about this, where all of a sudden they get the reparations checks, and then go, get the reparations checks, and then we go and buy rims, phones, shoes, all that, right? And all the money just goes back to where it was in the first place, which is in the hands of the wealthy.
Right.
And right. The corporate, you know. So, totally. So yeah, my end argument, maybe I'll tweet this to kick the hornet's nest, is I'm very much against reparations, but not because I don't think we should get anything from it, but because it just wouldn't make a difference.
It wouldn't work. Yeah.
I think in one, you all money does is exaggerate the problems you already have, or amplify the virtues,
right,
you know, present within. You can look at lottery winners and see that there's a great study about lottery winners. Books have been published about this. If you ain't right, you can't just suddenly get $1 million and then have $1 million mindset. Right. Like, no. You didn't build that.
No.
But in a way, you know, you're probably gonna go do some dumb stuff, man. Like that, and probably some of the stuff that you did that made you broke. The difference is you can afford to do it now.
Right. Yeah. Which is even worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So like,
hey man, it's time. This has been like super fun, super long, and I didn't intend to end up with in reparations, but there you have it.
There we are.
I have two final questions for you. Number one is where can people find you, follow you, interact with you, engage with you?
Here's the great part about me. I feel bad for anybody born with the name Ed Lattimore after who wants to do anything remotely related to a personal brand, because I got Ed Lattimore, the website, Ed Lattimore, the Twitter, Ed Lattimore, the Instagram, Ed Lattimore, the Facebook page-ish. My personal Facebook page is my full name, Edward Ashley Lattimore Jr., but my fan page is Ed Lattimore Boxer. So like that. So Ed Lattimore, just type that in. You'll get a bunch of stuff. I think my wiki page is Ed Lattimore too. Like, it's nuts.
Easy to find. Great, man. Thank you. And final question, like, what is one word that you want to leave, or one phrase that you want to leave our audience with?
The difficulty of a task is irrelevant if it is vital to your success.
All right.
I'm a big fan of that idea. Stop worrying about how hard something is, just if it'll make a difference or not. And
Do it. If it was easy, everybody would do it. Cheers, man. Really, really appreciate your time. Really appreciate you. Thank you so much. Like, this is really fun. This is really inspiring.
Yeah, man. I had a good time, too. Thanks for having me. I really mean that.
Thank you for listening to the podcast episode. After 20 years as a serial entrepreneur, it's my passion to bring you ideas and insights from some of the best entrepreneurs, leaders, and thinkers in the world straight to your phone. We're going to be launching many, many more podcast episodes in the future, so please subscribe and leave a 5-star review if you found any value at all from today's conversation. Your reviews and feedback mean the world to me.